Welcome, everybody, to Health, Wealth, and Divine. My name is Juwanza. Welcome back, everybody. I know it's been a minute since we've done the shows, but it's a pleasure to be up and running again. I'm very, very fortunate to have the opportunity to interview some fabulous people. I mean, I am I consider myself very blessed to be able to speak to people of the caliber of the guests that you'll be hearing tonight. And if you're a regular listener to the show, then you know once every 2 weeks or so, we have our entrepreneur segment. And our resident professor is Professor Joseph T. Geiger. He's author of several books, but a fabulous book for entrepreneurs titled Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. And for any entrepreneur out there, you know that what it is that you do. If you're an entrepreneur, you know that it takes a lot of work, a lot of hard work, a lot of long hours, money, you know. And, I mean, you want to make sure that if you're investing time, energy, and money into something, and, of course, the hopes is that it will pay off, that it will be fruitful, you want to make sure that you're doing it right. And so many people, when it comes to entrepreneurship, get great ideas and they just jump out there without a plan, without a mentor, without some sort of compass to guide them through the process, because there are a lot of, can be some very rough waters out there. And if you don't know how to navigate those seas, then you could drown, okay? And so with that being said, that's why this book was written, to help entrepreneurs like yourself to succeed. So, again, the name of the book is Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 105 Business Principles. Again, Professor Geiger is going to be my guest today. We're going through his book chapter by chapter, principle by principle, and the hopes is that you'll get the book because you're going to need it. If you're an entrepreneur, you're going to need certain principles to memorize even, or if you don't memorize them, to have this book so that you can go to a principle that applies to whatever the situation is at hand. So for those of you who don't know who Professor Geiger is, I'll introduce him. Currently retired, Professor Geiger grew up on a Kansas farm and graduated from the School of Business at the University of Denver. And over his lifetime, he's actually started over 10 businesses, two of which predated his college graduation. And after his second retirement, he taught entrepreneurship and small business management. And again, in order to help people like yourself succeed in business, he wrote Entrepreneurial Success, 101 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. And the book just keeps growing and growing and growing as Professor continues to add principles, and we're up to 105 business principles. Professor, first let me welcome you back to Health, Wealth, and Divine, also known as Juwanza for Life. It's a great day to be an entrepreneur, and I can't think of a better person to talk about entrepreneurship than yourself. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
You know, Professor, when, you know, people think of entrepreneurship, there are a lot of books out there that are on the market talking about entrepreneurship. I mean, there are a lot of people that have written a lot of books. I mean, if you go to any bookstore, you might see rows and rows of books on entrepreneurship, how to do it, 10 steps to becoming an entrepreneur, 15 steps, you know, entrepreneurship made easy. I mean, all of these type books. But there's something uniquely different about your book. Could you tell our listeners what it is? What is it about your book on entrepreneurship that makes it vastly different than the other books that are out there?
Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, there's 105 principles, which is quite a few. And in college, in schools, and in, frankly, most of the books, they talk about what you should do to be successful as an entrepreneur, and frankly, that perhaps needs to be known. But as you, Juwanza, know, now that you are an entrepreneur and you have your own business, or a couple of them actually, between you and your wife, once you start, you don't really care so much about what you should do. You really care about how to do it. And knowing what you should do is all well and good, but if you don't know how to do it, the information is frankly just worthless to you. So this book tries to break down into fairly small details what you should do. And one of the ones I use is if you look at any of the other books and college courses, and let's take advertising and what you should do for roadside signs, billboards, and they prattle on and on and on about why you should do it and where they should be and on and on. And when you get through, you ask yourself, well, this sounds great. I want to do that. How do I do it? And you reread the chapter again and you say, beats me. I don't have a clue. Mine is not that way. If you want to put up a roadside sign, you need to follow the rule of seven. And the rule of seven says you're allowed one picture and seven words on your sign. If you go over the seven words, people won't read it. They're driving down the highway. They're trying not to have a crash and a wreck. They're trying to be safe, and they have very limited amount of time to look at the sign. And what should the seven words be? Well, they should be two things. They should tell you what it is and where it is, and that's all. So you have a picture and seven words to tell you what is on the sign, what is being advertised, and how to get there, where it is. And that's all it is. And anybody can do it if you know those three things: what you should have on the sign, what it is and where it is, and you're limited to one picture and no more than seven words. And with that, I think almost anybody can do it. But that kind of information is not being told. They tell you that you ought to have them and why you ought to have them and on, but not how. And this book tells you how.
You know, that's very important because, again, people who, let's say, for example, you might take somebody that's on there, let's say they just have an entrepreneurial spirit and they, like yourselves, have opened and, you know, started and, you know, ran over 10 businesses. They've done it many times and things that they wouldn't just automatically know just simply because through trial and error they've learned certain things over the years. But somebody that's just starting, let's say their very first business, then they need someone to take them by the hand and say, look, this is how you do it. Okay, this is how. You know, and that's very important. And I think that if there was a poll done of the business owners that failed within the first year, many of them would say they did not have that. They did not have that person, that mentor, that information on how to do it. And when you're just starting out, you definitely need that. And I'm sure that you can say just through your own experience that even if you had that in the very beginning, that maybe this book of 105 principles would be shorter because many of these principles were born out of your experience.
Yes, they were. And frankly, you learn things when you fail, not when you succeed. When you succeed, you think, boy, am I smart. I am just so smart. I just wow the whole world. And then the next problem you have, you don't succeed and you think to yourself, well, perhaps I'm not anywhere near as smart as I thought I was. And so my book tells you what you should do and then, more importantly, how you should go about doing it. What you should do, why you should do it, and then the big thing is how, so that you can actually do that. And where I can't be a mentor to everybody, I can be a mentor through the book. And when you're starting a business and you hit a problem, or you start into a problem area, you can look it up in the book. And what did he do? How did he solve this problem? And how did he go about it? How did he define the problem? And then once you define it, then how do you do it step by step, baby steps with each one, so that you can do it properly. And as you said, had I had a book like this, it would have been starting these 11 businesses sure would have been a lot easier. I would have made a lot more money, and I certainly wouldn't have lost anywhere near the amount that I did. Because some of the problems that I had, and some of them weren't even problems. They were opportunities, and I did not take the opportunity because I did not understand it. But now I do, because I had it turned out so poorly. So that's what the book is all about.
Well, Professor, before we start getting into the principles tonight, if you could for a moment talk about just what is required, because, you know, there are a lot of people that, again, have fabulous ideas. There may be people that are listening to the show right now that have an idea for a business, and it's a great idea. It is truly a great idea, and they might be in the process of writing the business plan, and they might have a fabulous business plan as well. But what is required? Because a lot of times people aren't really aware of all that is involved until they get out there. And so if you can let them know, you know, just, and I'm sure a lot of it depends on the type of business, but, I mean, there's going to be a lot of time and energy and maybe even money involved in starting your own business. And I don't want people to be deluded into thinking that, oh, I got a great idea, you know what I mean, I'm going to go make $1 million. Not that you can't, but there's work that's involved in it. And it might not be, your hours might not be 9 to 5. Can you talk about that for a moment?
Yeah, well, your hours certainly are not going to be 9 to 5. I joke, you know, that there's a big joke in the industry that your hours are from 9 to 5. They're from 5 a.m. until 9 p.m. You start at 5 and you bring home to work at 9. So it's 9 to 5, but it's just in reverse. So to start with, you need to define what you're doing. What is your opportunity? What is the business opportunity that you found? And define it. What is it? How does it work? Who are you going to serve? What's your market? And so you define it as carefully as you can, as exactly as you can. And then you ask yourself, well, how do I go about this thing? And the answer is you plan. So what is your plan? And your plan should be pretty exact. The more exact you make the plan, the less money you're gonna hoop off and lose in getting it going. Where do you find a outline for a plan? Go to SCORE, SCORE. And it's an organization that has been going for many, many years. SCORE stands for Senior Corps of Retired Executives. They're all over the country. The last I saw, there was over 300 of them. I use the one where I live, SCORE. It's richmond.score.org. And they have a business plan outline. It's 26 pages. It sounds like an awful lot, but there's some pages in there that are just a single page, and there may be a sentence or a paragraph, a short paragraph, and then you fill it in. So, and they go through kind of step by step. If it's a new business or is an existing business that you're doing a yearly plan, which you should do. The new business should have a 3-year plan. It should be monthly in the first year and quarterly in the next two. An ongoing business should be monthly in the first year and quarterly in the next two. So, but they're done a little differently, and there is a great outline. And then you do a cash flow forecast. And the cash flow forecast tells you how much cash you'll need and when you'll need it. And people are forever asking me, this is my business, how much cash do I need? And my reaction is always the same, I don't have a clue. But I can tell you how you should find out. First, you write your business plan, which is a story of the business opportunity and how the opportunity is turned into a profitable business. And it is a story. There's no math in it. It's just a story. What you do, when you do it, who does it, how they go about it, who you have to hire, what tasks you have to do. And then when you get all that done, then you start back from the very first and you say, in the first month, how much money do I need? Well, I don't know how much money I need. So how do I find out? Let's start with the costs. How much is the electricity going to be? Do you have any rent? Do I need a computer? Do whatever you need to get started. And you do that month by month by month. And the cash flow forecast will tell you that you lose money in the first month and the second and the third. And by the fourth month, you're getting pretty close to a break even. And then the fifth month, you actually break even and you make a little. And so you say, okay, let's go back to the fourth month, which is the last month that I'm losing money. How much money cumulative did I lose to get to that point? And then you multiply that by 150%, so you have a 50% cushion. You need to remember that nobody ever in the history of the world went broke because they had too much money. That you can't do it. Going broke means you cannot pay your bills. And if you have too much money, I guarantee you, you can pay your bills. Now, there may be some things that you wish that you had not had too much money because you have an extra two investors and you really didn't need those investors. You borrowed too much money from the bank or from somebody. Well, that one you can pay back. And you can go to the investors and you can say, hey, we can get you out. You've only been in here for 4 or 5 months and we can get you out with a 10% profit. And maybe they'll do it and maybe they won't. But if you have too much money, that's simple. So that's how you do it. And it tells you how much money you need month after month. And it does both how much money you're making or losing that month and what is the cumulative for up to that point. And that's how you do it. It's really simple. But you need to be pretty exact. You need to be go into as much detail as you possibly can. So, for example, if you're selling shoes, you don't put in there that I'm going to sell $10,000 worth of shoes. You cannot call the shoe company up and say, send me $5,000 at wholesale shoes. They'll say, can't do that. What kind of shoes? What size? Kids? Right. Adults? Men's? Women's? High heels? Low heels? Tennis shoes? What? You want green ones or brown ones or black ones? What do you want? And you got to be exact. And when you get, the more exact you get, the less odds you have to go broke. Half the people who start business go broke in the first year, and the reason is they don't do this sort of thing.
Now, everybody, you understand what is involved. It's going to take discipline. Definitely going to take discipline. You could have a wonderful idea, but if you're not a disciplined person, that idea will not generate you any profit if you're not disciplined, because it's going to take discipline to follow what Professor Geiger just mentioned, even just concerning the cash flow forecast. It's going to take discipline to do a monthly cash flow forecast, even a quarterly cash flow forecast, and to continue to do it and to be as detailed and exact as he talked about. But that's what's required if you want to be successful. And so, again, that's why the book is written. And during the course of this show, we'll tell you how you can get the book. And tonight's show, we're going to be discussing growing a business. That's the chapter that we're in. We're in growing a business. Again, we're going through the book chapter by chapter, principle by principle, and we're currently on principle 69 in growing a business. And the title of this particular principle is Plan for the Party Before It Starts. Plan for the Party Before It Starts. Professor?
Well, basically what this principle is talking about, all of us when we start businesses, we have plans for it, and you have plans for what you're going to do the first month and the first year, the products or services that you're going to offer. But very often what happens is you think that you're going to sell, you came up with a widget, and it's a super widget, and you decided that you're going to sell super red and white widgets. And but pretty soon you think, hey, you know, maybe I should sell red and white widgets not only in Richmond, Virginia, but maybe I ought to sell them in Atlanta, Georgia. And so we're going to expand to Atlanta. Well, don't wait until 2 weeks before you get ready to expand. Start doing it two months or two, better yet, 2 years before you expand. And then you can go through and you'll have a better shot. You'll have a better idea. And I've seen people, whenever you grow a business, and people oftentimes think that, gee, when I'm growing the business, this is easy. The hard part was to get it started in the first place. And but now, heck, I know how to do it. I have already the people. I know how to do the advertising. I know how to do the promotion. I know how to do all this stuff. And that's true, you do. But what usually happens is the costs for any expansion all come up front. It's front-loaded. And the profits or the income side, we don't even talk about profits here. Maybe we ought to just talk about the income side, comes well after the expense side. So if you're going to expand the business and open a new store, you have to have the physical store, you have to have the people, you got to have the fixtures, you got to have the inventory. All of those expenses come before you start growing the business, before you start having any income. You're just spending money like there's no tomorrow. And you think, well, heck, I know how to do that. I got through the first time. Well, the first time you were doing it yourself, and this time you have people. So where do you get the people? Well, I get the people from the ones I have now. Pick the best ones and send the best ones down there to start that new Atlanta store, because I'm going to stay here in Richmond. And that's all well and good. But just remember, you just depleted your Richmond store. The Richmond store was going to be the cash cow that supplied you the money to expand. And now you've taken your very best people and you sent them down to Atlanta. So what's going to happen to the Richmond store? Well, I'll tell you what's going to happen. The sales are going to go down. The profits are going to go down. The expenses are going to go up, because you had people before who knew what they were doing and had maximized the sales and minimized the expenses. They're gone now. So you got new people, and they don't know as well. So not only are you spending money like there's no tomorrow getting your store going in Atlanta, what happens is your store in Richmond just went flat. So you've got a double whammy. You're spending money on one side, and you're not having the income you planned on the other side, and maybe you're even worse yet, you're losing money. So you're spending money on both sides. Oh goodness!
I take
this
it you're
is called planning
up.
in advance, and I'm telling you this story because I did it exactly that way. I took my best people and sent them up to start the new store, and the current one I had went flat, and the other one cost money, and I almost went broke. And that's why I know what I'm talking about when I talk about this story, because I lived it. And
well, I
nobody
take it you're a proponent
told me
of
beforehand.
Training.
Go ahead.
Oh, just gonna, excuse me. I was going to say, I take it you're a proponent of cross-training your employees, because the flip side of that would have been certainly you weren't going to send if you sent your best ones up and then the home store or the base store lacked, the alternative would be to send those up to start the new store that were not the best. And of course, when you're starting a new store, you don't want to send up there that aren't good.
That's even worse. That's even worse. So how do you do this? This is what you start the party plan for the party way before you start. So if you know that at some point in the future you want to expand, you don't know where, you know, you're not even to the point where you want to expand to Atlanta, you just think you want to expand, what's it going to take to expand? Well, the big thing it's going to take is people, and it's going to take money. It's easy to calculate the money. It is way, way harder to calculate the good people. And how do you get the good people? Will you cross-train them? Well, how do you cross-train them? Let's get specific. Well, the military has a system of doing this because they've had this problem for many, many years. And so they call it OJT, on-the-job training. And the best way I know is that what you do, let's say that you what I had was I sold airplanes and rented airplanes, had a flight school and had a shop. So what I learned belatedly, and the next time I expanded, I was ready for it. So I took salesmen, and let's say I had three salespeople. I was one, and I had two others. And I was the head of the sales department as well as running the store. I took one of them, and I told them both, hey, would one of you like to learn to be a manager? And, yeah, sure. So, okay, here's what we're going to do. For 2 weeks, you're going to be in charge of the sales. You're going to run the sales department. That means you're going to order the parts, the airplanes. You're going to organize and run the advertising, and so on. And you're going to do it. I'm not. You are. And if you want to come to me, you can come to me and ask me about things. I'm not too sure I'm going to be all that helpful because I want you to learn. And if I tell you how to do it and then you're able to do it, you haven't learned very well. When you come up with the idea and you have to execute it, and you have a problem, and you figure out how to solve it, and then you have to execute the solution, now you're learning stuff. So you cross-train, I had a friend after I got myself in terrible trouble, and I went to him, and how the hell did you do it? And that's how he did it. He had a big repair shop and about 25 people. And I think every one of those 25 people, or at least the vast majority of them, had been the manager of the shop or parts of it at one time for usually 2 weeks. And Walter would put him in charge, and then he'd have a meeting with him in the morning and or in the evening, and they could tell him what they were going to do. And he said, I wasn't very helpful. I was a sounding board. And the only time I would be helpful at all is I'd say, well, are you sure that's going to work? How's it going to work? Mm-hmm. But that's about all he ever said to them, and they had to figure it out. And if things went wrong, he knew that they were going to go wrong ahead of time because he'd been down that party road many times. And so he'd stay real close. They didn't realize he was so close. But he would stay real close to them, and when things started to go upside down, he would get it corrected by bringing them to the reality of what was happening. And so his shop, if Walter was gone for 2 weeks, it didn't make any difference. And if that time the regular shop foreman was gone, that didn't make any difference at all because there were all kinds of people there who had done it before. So that's the story of planning for the party before it starts, way before it starts. You know you're going to do something, start planning for it, and the difficult part is always people. The other parts are easy. People are not easy. So plan for it way ahead of time.
You know, there has to be a shift, you know, for a lot of people who are being cross-trained, even if they agree that, you know, yeah, I'd like to try the manager position for a while. Yeah, I'd be interested in that, because it's going to cause them to think in a way and think about things that they never had to think about before,
mm-hmm.
you know, up until that They just had to do their job, and you know, which they knew how to do, probably in and out,
mm-hmm.
and then they'd go home. But now you're talking about ordering supplies and, you know, whatever other duties were entailed in the position that they were being cross-trained to do. You know, it caused them to think in ways that they never even had to think about. They never even had to worry about certain problem-solving, you know, coming up with solutions to issues that they just ordinarily on a day-to-day basis just prior to that would not have to think about. So I think it's a great idea because it just causes people to think, you know, and
mm-hmm.
That's, you know, a lot of times when you look on just going through life, you're meeting people, you know, one of the things that people often don't do is think, you know,
yep.
about and very, very important things. They just leave that to other people. So I think the cross-training piece is very, very important. I'd like to backtrack for a quick second, Professor, because you talked about money. For a moment, you know, just for example,
mm-hmm.
if somebody never have too much money, which is, of course, true, but now somebody just starting out, that might not be their big problem. That might not be something that they have. Somebody saying, okay, because you're talking about you might have to order supplies, you might have to, you know, starting up, you got to count the cost. You know, there's a certain
mm-hmm.
cost that are going to be involved. Starting it. What do you, are you a proponent of the SBA, the Small Business Association, somebody getting a small business loan to help with the startup costs?
When I was in business, I looked into that two or three times, and I never went past looking into it. First of all, it's a government loan. They do require a good deal of information to back up the loan, of course. So do bankers, but bankers have different motives than the SBA. The bankers have a profit motive, twofold. They want to lend money because that's how they make a profit. They lend you money and they charge you 10%, and it costs them 5%. So that's how they make a profit. If you don't pay it back, their profit just turned upside down. And they don't like that very much, needless to say. In government, they're not interested in making a profit. They're interested in doing other things. The other things may be they want businesses in an area that has no businesses, and the people who live there are not doing well. So that has nothing to do with running a business. And so I just didn't have any luck there. Now, others do, and the other thing that the SBA do is they have certain groups of people that they want to help. They want to help women get started. And that's worldwide. There's a whole bunch of companies around that have done microloans for women, primarily women. They won't lend to men because, to be real honest with you, men don't tend to pay back their bills quite as often as women do. And there's places in India that they will loan a woman $50, and she has to pay it back at a dollar a week, you know, and that's to get a business of some sort started, or it may be even less than that. And they're called microloans, and they're a pain in the rear, but they're often run by government. And microloan lending is that they, again, have ulterior motives that are not the normal profit motive. So if you want to do something with the SBA, just understand that there's a tremendous amount of paperwork, and the motivation is not the same as a bank or a regular lender. So if you go into that, you might say, when I had an airport facility, we had 50 jet hangars, and one of our jet customers was a guy who made women's clothes, and he made it in a very rough area in Los Angeles. And he had a pretty high fences around it. He had guards that the people could come down, come off the freeway, and go directly into his property. They had to cross a street, and that was it. And he had guards there, and when they locked it down as soon as people came to work, and they unlocked it when they left, and it wasn't to keep the people in, it was to keep them safe, because it was not a safe area. And I went in there, and I said, why in the hell did you pick this area? And he said, well, the government paid for everything. Mm-hmm. And I have business loans that nobody can match. I mean, they're essentially zero interest loans. If I would build a facility there, and he hired a couple hundred people from the area, but nobody, I don't think very few of them walked there. They came in their cars. Well, maybe some of them did, and they walked. But he had he was open. I don't know that he had a night shift because it was so darn dangerous down there. But the government paid. He had big SBA loans, multi-million dollar SBA loans.
Are typically the SBA loans low, no interest?
No. No, they're typically not. But the way you get a low interest loan from the SBA is you look at what did they want to do in your area? Who do they want to help? Who do they want to hire? They don't necessarily want to help you. They might want to help your wife. They might want to help you, but they might have other things going on. So, if you and your wife were going to try to get an SBA loan, I would strongly recommend that you disappear in the woodwork. You can do whatever work you want on the loan, but she needs to be the face of it, because the chances of her getting a loan are much higher than you getting the same loan.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Everybody, I know you're learning a lot today. You probably didn't know a lot of the things that we've been discussing tonight. Again, all of this information that you're hearing tonight, I mean, you got to get the book. I mean, if you're enjoying the conversation, you're definitely going to enjoy the book. Our professor goes into a lot of detail, gives personal examples throughout the book. Matter of fact, Professor, we're at the halfway mark. Before we go into the next principle, how can the people buy your book?
They can get it online from me at theroadtothetop.com, or they can get it from Amazon at Amazon Books. And you want to put in Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles. You need to put the 105 Business Principles in it, because there's a whole lot of Entrepreneur Success books. But there's only one that says 105 business principles.
And with that, they can get purchase the cash flow forecast, correct?
Yes, they can get the cash flow forecast from, not from Amazon, but from me. Or they can use the one from SCORE. I mean, SCORE has I like mine better, but that's just because I developed it many years ago, and I know how to use it better, and I know how to use SCORES. But SCORES is okay. Mine is just in more detail. I'm a real believer in, if it takes you an extra 2 weeks to do the cash flow forecast because it's so detailed, just remember, when you're losing money on your cash flow forecast, it's mythical money. When you start losing money in your bank account, it's your money. That's nothing mythical
right.
about it. That's the real stuff. And
right.
I want to, if I'm going to lose money, I want to lose money, mythical money, and figure
That's
out
right.
how come am I losing so much? What's wrong here? And maybe it works the other way around. I've done some of these that show that I'm going to make a great big profit starting in the second month, and I think, I don't believe that. I think I better figure out why this is, because I just don't think that's going to work out that way. And normally I find out I made a mistake someplace. And the time to find that out is before you start cashing checks at your local bank, which is your money.
Would you say then, Professor, that the cash flow forecast is as important as the book? Because somebody might say, you know, I hadn't planned on getting the cash flow forecast. I'll just get the book. But you need cash flow forecast. You know,
well, the book.
What everybody knows, it might seem optional. You need
if you go to buy the book and then go to SCORE, because that's free. And there is no price for it's free. You can just download it and use it. And the same thing with their cash flow forecast. But I think, you know, the book is only is less than $20. I think it's like $18 is what the book is, plus shipping. And so you can get the book, and it doesn't cost very much, and it doesn't cost anything if you use SCORE, richmond.score.org. And that can't be any less expensive than it is, because there is no cost. It's zero.
And the book will pay for itself, I guarantee you.
I guarantee you it will.
One principle price will be worth more than the price.
Will certainly pay you $20. It surely will.
Everybody, again, we're going through the book principle by principle. We're up to principle number 70, which is perform tasks most critical to your business. Perform tasks most critical to your business. I assume you're talking about the entrepreneur performing the
task. Well, there's all kinds of tasks that a business has to do. Let me give you an example. If you buy an Apple phone, they do not make the phone. They sell the phone. They do not make the phone. So for Apple, what is the most critical task? Well, for Apple, the most critical task is definitely not being a manufacturer, because they're not one. Their most critical task is doing software and doing advertising and the phone and all of that. But the physical cell phone, they do not make that. That's made by another company entirely, or maybe several companies make them, all to the same spec. So it all depends upon what is the most critical thing that you do. And so in the case of Apple, it is definitely not the telephone. That is not the most critical, because they job that out. I worked for a while for a very dear friend of mine who was in the airplane business, and he made small airplane parts. And he tried to job those out. Well, what he found out was that the people who had the expertise to build highly technical parts, that there was two ways you can build them, wrong and right. There was not an almost right. It was either right or it wasn't. And what he found was, I used to joke with him, I said, you know, Roy, if you were making parts for farm tractors, you could job out those parts, because if they were a little heavy or a little this or a little that, it really wouldn't make any difference at all. But you're making airplane parts, and they have to fit. They have to fit perfectly. They have to be exactly the same weight. They were fiberglass parts. They couldn't be too heavy. They couldn't have sections that had too much resin in them. They just had to be dead perfect. And the problem was that finding people who could do that at the price he needed to wasn't possible. So that was a costly lesson that Roy had, where he tried to job them out test ones that he got looked beautiful. But when they started to go in production, they could not hold the quality. And so in his case, the making the parts was, he could not job that out. Maybe there were some other things he could have jobbed out, but he couldn't job that out. In the case of Apple, it's just the opposite. They don't have any interest in making the little phones or the iPads or any of that. That's all they job that out. But they do have they do keep other things in their own control. So you figure out what is the most important thing that you do, and you job that out. You do not job that out. And how do you do that? How do you figure it out? Well, it's really pretty easy when you get right down to it, because you ask yourself, what happens to my business if whatever I am going to job out, I have a problem with? And so I don't do that for a while. Well, Roy, his company, designed parts for airplanes, for general aviation airplanes, to make them fly faster. And he thought his most important was being an engineering firm. Well, you ask yourself, what happens if we don't create any new parts, any new designs for 6 months? What happens to the company? Well, it probably stops growing. What happens if we don't make parts that we can sell for 6 months? That's simple. We go out of business. We're broke. So which is the more important to us to keep in-house? Well, it's certainly not the design part. It's certainly the parts. So that's how you do it.
You know, Professor, as I'm listening to you and you just gave the example of your friend Roy, that sounds like a very specific market that he was servicing.
It is.
And the thing about that is that, you know, he wasn't obviously the only person. I mean, if he went out of business today, you know, somebody else would have stepped in and fulfilled that. But he saw an opportunity, you know, and that, you know, just going back to you, you know, one of your principles and what we've talked about in the past is that opportunities are everywhere. And even though in his particular situation, he wasn't able to job out, you know, certain things, whereas if he'd have been in a different market altogether, he would have. It was still an opportunity that he saw and was able to get in. And I don't know how long his business lasted. How long was he in that for a while, or was it an in and out thing?
He's still in it. He died some years ago, but his sons took over, and it has changed a good deal. But he's still in the same basic business. I should say the customers have changed. When I was there and helping him, we were selling to single and twin engine. Piston-driven airplanes, and they are now virtually exclusively jets, business jets, and turboprops. But other than that, they're doing the same thing. They're building parts to make them go faster, and they're building parts that people want. One of their big ones recently was landing lights, and the airplanes. Frankly, because it's kind of difficult to get things through the FAA, the federal government, get them certified, the manufacturers, once they got a landing light certified, they put it in everything they had. Well, with some of these new, very, very powerful lights, you can get bulbs that put out 3 and 4 and 10 times the light, the lumens, to light up when you come into landing. So one of the things they did was certify these new lights and then adapt them for different types of airplanes, and they've sold extremely well, just really well, and you wouldn't believe how much they get for them. But it's a simple sell. you go up with the person at night, and you turn on, you have one of your lights that is the old style, and you turn that on, and then you turn on the new ones. There's a tremendous difference. They go from maybe 100,000 watts of power to 5 million. I mean, it's just unbelievable, the difference. And a pilot sees that, and they say, I don't care what it costs. I want it.
Well, Professor, what are your thoughts on niches, or niches, as they are sometimes called? Because, you know, you look at shows like Shark Tank or other shows where, you know, they have the prospective person coming up looking to get investors to invest in their business, and they, you know, say, I've got this product or this service that nobody else has, you know, and it's supplying a service that is needed, but nobody else has come up with this idea but me. But there's a market out there. There are thousands of people out there, millions of people, potentially billions of people that could use this. What are your thoughts on niches, and if somebody is deciding or determining that they need, that they want to go into business for themselves, would that be something that you would suggest that
yeah.
they look at? You know, look.
Absolutely. I mean, it just being a big fish in a small pond for the small business is absolutely the way to go. And that's another one of my little principles. When it comes time to pick a bank, you want to be a big fish in a small pond. In other words, don't go to Bank of America. Go to your local Farmers and Merchants Bank that has four outlets. And if you need to borrow more money than they can lend, don't you worry. You tell them about it, and they'll put together a consortium of a number of banks to do it. The same thing is true of products. I do not want to try to compete with Walmart. Because I'll tell you right now, I'm going to lose. You can't do it. It cannot be done. Because they can give the damn product away, and it won't hurt them. And in 3 months, you're dead. And then they go back and start
right.
charging for it. So don't think you're going to compete with Walmart, because you will not. You will not be successful. You will lose. So compete with in a small niche market, where you're the only one in it. And it doesn't make it one of the to work my way through school, college, I was in Colorado, and I made little tiny trout flies. And the only difference between the ones I made that sold at wholesale for $2 a piece and the ones that were available commercially that sold at retail for 20 cents a piece was mine were much smaller. But I was the only one who made them. And they were not the sort of thing that most people could make. And they were just tiny, tiny. They were physically the size of mosquitoes. A really, really big one would be a housefly. I mean, that would be a huge one that I wouldn't make, because others could do that. Mine were tiny. And they sold for 17 times as much as the competitor. And I didn't have to worry about anybody undercutting me, because nobody could make them.
Could you have gotten a patent on something like that?
No.
I mean, are there certain, I'm sure there are certain rules, for lack of a better term.
There are.
When it comes
there
to
are.
Patent.
And the patent, there are three different types of patents, and of the three types, one of them has a variant, and that's the patent that started, they didn't even have it until 1999, when the, Microsoft, I think, was the one who went to them and said, we need to patent our software. And they didn't have anything like that. You could not get a patent on it, but you could get a what's wrong with my head? Just like a book or music. But you couldn't get a patent, and they wanted the patent because patents are better for that sort of thing. So there's three, there's essentially four different styles of patents. Three of the four are 20 years, and one of them is 12 years, I think, or maybe it's 15, but it's shorter. So you can, I give you, that almost anybody can understand. The desktop computer came out first, and when somebody invented a laptop, that could be patented. And it was a use patent. It's called a use patent. And so you could get a 17-year or 15-year patent on a laptop because they put it all in one. Now, nothing about it was any different than the one that was desktop. The screen was different because in order to have a little one, you had to have a flat screen, which is an LED, and the big ones were like the old television sets of many years ago. But the guts of it were the same, except they were miniaturized. And the way they got miniaturized is when the information from the space program got out, and they no longer used tubes, and then they went from tubes to smaller devices and then to the tiny, tiny ones. And that made it possible to have a laptop, and that was patentable. So, yes, yes and no, there is. In the case of the trout fly, there was not. But in many cases, there are, and I strongly recommend that if you think what you have could be patentable, that you get a patent pending on it, which gives you a year. It's now called a provisional patent. The words patent pending are no longer used, but it's a provisional patent. It costs $70 to do it, and it's real simple to do. I mean, anybody can do that. It is good for 1 year. And at the end of 1 year, it cannot be extended. And at the end of the year, you can you put in for a regular patent, and you may or may not get a regular patent. But for that 1 year, you're safe. Nobody can do what you're doing. And the neat thing about it, with a regular patent, you have to give very detailed drawings of what you're doing, and those drawings are public information. Once you get the patent, it is public information. So people can copy it. They just can't put it in production until your patent runs out. But with a provisional patent, it is not public information. All the patent office will say, if you go to them and you say, well, I'm gonna do a laptop computer, you would have said this 20 years ago, they would have said, well, there's a provisional patent on that right now. And the provisional patent runs out on January the 18th of next year. So that's what they'd tell you. And that's all they would tell you. Wouldn't tell you who had it. Wouldn't tell you sick of nothing.
People will be waiting once they find out when that patent runs out. If you don't on a normal patent, for lack of a better term, I said normal, but you can get it extended like a 20-year, because I would imagine that.
No, once, you cannot get you get a regular patent. So if you, let's say it's an agricultural product, it's you figured out how to make corn get much bigger heads, and a lot more corn or wheat that doubles the size of the kernels. And so you get a provisional patent, and you put it in as a provisional patent that I'm doubling the size of the wheat kernels. At the end of your year, if you don't have your patent in and approved at the end of your 12-month period, 365 days. If you don't have it done, somebody else can dump one in. And so you have to have it in. And if somebody else dumps it in, well, then they have to go through the process. and whoever gets to the whoever puts it in first. So you got a provisional patent, and 6 months later you filed for a regular patent, and a year later you got the regular patent. Well, nobody can file for a regular patent because of your provisional for 1 year. But 1 year and 1 day, they can. And if you are not already in there, they would beat you to it. There's some very famous cases. Everybody knows about Alexander Graham Bell, but very few people know about Elijah Gray, who had a telephone, and he put his patent in 2 hours later than Alexander Graham Bell. 2 hours.
Hmm.
And that's why Bell got it and Gray didn't. 2 hours.
Wow. We'd be having a whole nother conversation, huh? If it was Gray,
yeah.
We'd be having instead of a Bell phone, it'd be Gray phone, right?
That's right. And I have when I do classes on entrepreneurship, I spend a lot of time on patents and legal issues. And I've had professors come in and listen to me and say, well, I don't want to do that. That's just, I mean, you're too deeply in the weeds. And I said, the reason I'm deep in the weeds is because I've been sued and you haven't. And if you know this legal stuff, you won't get sued. And if you don't, you will. And I don't want my students to get sued, and I'll teach them how not to.
Everybody, this show could go on and on and on. I mean, I'm enjoying it. I know you all are enjoying it. We have to respect Professor's time. He's coming on again in 2 weeks. Okay, so mark your calendar. Matter of fact, I take that back. He's actually coming on Friday. We'll be having a whole nother discussion in a whole nother area. But if you're an entrepreneur and you, I just want you to know he'll be back on Tuesday after next. So mark your calendar, 7 o'clock, same time, same station, and but again, he'll be on this Friday. We're going to be having a discussion about global warming. What's really going on? Global warming, part two. So I want you to go back and listen to part one. Okay, that's in the archive, so you can kind of see where we're coming from. But definitely go back and listen to part one. And this Friday, mark your calendar, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Professor Geiger is going to be back. We'll be talking about global warming, what's really going on, part two. I guarantee you that you're going to be riveted when you hear the information that you're going to hear. Professor, again, great show. Awesome information. And they can get your book again at The Road to the Top. .com, but you want to definitely put in 105 business principles. Otherwise, you're not going to get the right book. Okay.
Yeah.
So, Professor, any parting words for our listeners? Again, great, great information, and I can't wait for the next two shows. I can't wait to, you know, for us to continue this topic on growing a business, and of course, this Friday, I'm talking about global warming. Any parting words for our listeners?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm going to have a very unusual class on entrepreneurship here in Richmond, Virginia, and we'll be able to tell you the days of it when it'll be. Probably next Friday I'll be able to tell you, because I'll have it then.
Okay. Wow, Professor, still teaching. still teaching. I mean.
Yeah, this is a class on how you do it. Not what you should do. Well, it'll have that too, but the big part is how you do it in real detail. We take a 16-week class and turn it into an 8-week class, so it's a pretty high-powered class.
Well, everybody, make sure you tune in Friday so you can get more information about that. Make sure you tune in on 2 weeks from today. We'll be picking up on principle number 71, systematically compensate employees good ideas. Systematically compensate your employees for their good ideas. And we'll be discussing that and countless other principles in this great book on Tuesday after next. Again, so Professor Geiger, again, awesome show. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Great Yes.
See you later. Bye for now.
All right. Take care. Everybody, that is Professor Joseph T. Geiger. The name of the book is Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 105 Business Principles. You know, again, I just want to stress this, that it's very important if you're just doing something for the first time and you don't know the ins and outs, the nuts and the bolts of the whole, you know, thing. You could have a wonderful idea, and there could be other people who are sharing with you things that they've heard, maybe some things that they've even experienced. You have to be careful who you listen to when it comes to something as important as business. When it comes to business, you could be dealing with attorneys. You could be dealing with contracts. You could be dealing with all kinds of liabilities. I mean, you know, you definitely want to make sure that the person who you're getting your information from knows what they are talking about. Because you can't afford for somebody to give you some wrong information, and as a result of the wrong information that they give you, you end up over a barrel, and all they can say is, oh, my bad. You know, I thought such and such and such and such and such and such. Oh, I thought they said so and so and so and so and so and so. What you don't know can hurt you. And what other people don't know but think they know and are sharing with you, that can hurt you too. Okay? Professor Geiger's got over 50 years experience as a successful entrepreneur. Has he made mistakes? Of course. As a result of that, he's written a book with principles in it. Principles for business and principles for life. These principles aren't just for business. They're principles for life as well. So I encourage you strongly to get the book. It's called Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top. Professor Joseph T. Geiger. Geiger is spelled G-E-I-G-E-R. Professor Joseph T. Geiger. You won't regret it. This is one of those books that if you get it, you won't look back and say, dang, I wish I hadn't gotten that. The book is less than $20, and one principle can save you $1 million or more. Okay, so it's a deal. Okay, you don't get many deals anymore, but this book is definitely a deal. So, again, thank you so much for your time. I strongly encourage you to get the book. And to all of you entrepreneurs out there, all of you will be entrepreneurs, would be entrepreneurs. I want to congratulate you in advance on your success. You have a wonderful idea. Make sure that you protect that idea, and that once you get out there, that you get out there right, okay? That you cross all of your T's, that you dot all of your I's, because you're going to invest a lot of time, a lot of energy, and potentially a lot of money in your business. And your business is like your baby, right? So you want to protect it, okay? And you want to make sure that the decisions that you make are made with information that is sound, okay? You can't afford mistakes. So make sure that you do things the right way and you connect with the right people and guard your business, okay, like it's your baby, because it is. Again, congratulations on your success in advance. My name is Juwanza. Don't forget to tune in to Professor Geiger this Friday at 7 p.m. We're going to be talking about global warming. What's really going on, okay? Part two. Okay, so scroll through the archives. You're going to find all kinds of awesome, awesome shows with some awesome, awesome guests. I mean, we got shows on spirituality. I mean, scroll down the list, and I guarantee you, you're going to find something that you'll be able to benefit from spiritually, entrepreneurially, if that's the word, and we're going to be talking about your divinity as well. So, again, my name is Juwanza, and I truly, truly thank you so much for your time. You could be doing something else, but you're here with my person, and you spent the last hour or so with my person and Professor Joseph T. Geiger. See you on Friday, everybody. Peace.